This is Boston Public Radio. I am Jim Browdy, and she is Marg Regan. About three weeks ago, a very timely piece appeared in the Boston Globe. It was called Beside the Pope, Who Speaks Latin Today? Its author, the language columnist for the Globe, executive producer of the Visual Thesaurus and Vocabulary.com, Ben Zimmer, joins us. Welcome to Boston Public Radio, Ben.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Ben, for joining us. Well, Ben, in fact, even though Jim was a little dismissive there in his opening about who
Not
speaks Latin,
not at all,
besides,
actually.
You found some people who spoke Latin, Ben. Who would those people be?
Yeah, believe it or not, there's a whole living Latin movement. People who are trying to get Latin to be used as a spoken language, not just treating it as a dead language that's on the page that you might read in a Latin class, but actually a language that you can speak conversationally. I got to attend a conference that was held in New York City that really was quite eye-opening. There were a whole bunch of participants. A lot of them were high school teachers from around the Northeast. So they would know Latin in order to teach it, but they didn't necessarily have any experience trying to, say, you know, just talk about their day in Latin. That would be a completely new experience for most of them. But then there were also people there who were actually quite fluent, and it's amazing to hear someone just rattle off, conversational Latin and hear it living in that way, and it was pretty amazing.
But I think people mostly think this is sort of a joke. I am really into Latin. I took Latin in school. One of my kids took Latin for a long time because I think it really helps you with English, because schools don't teach grammar that much, at least the public schools don't anymore. It does help you with your own language, doesn't it? Not to mention help you on the SATs.
That's for sure. I mean, there are plenty of good reasons for learning Latin. I studied Latin in high school. It gives you a key to understanding not just a lot of the roots of English words, but it can be a kind of a key for learning about Western civilization in general. But so what's interesting is that what this living Latin movement has done has taken all of that, you know, valuable knowledge and made it something that everyone can participate in. As one of the organizers of the movement said, Western civilization does not have to be a spectator sport. You can get in there, you can speak it, and you really feel like an active participant.
Hey, Ben Zimmer, what is the education infrastructure? I know that you can't stereotype it, but or speak for everyone. From Arnie Duncan, the secretary, on down, what's their take on the importance of Latin in 2013? They're not bought into it like Marjorie and the people you checked out are they, or are they?
Well, for the most part, there certainly is not as much of an emphasis on learning Latin as there might have been in the past, when that kind of classical education was more central to everybody's learning. So, you know, our early presidents, for instance, would have known Latin and Greek quite well. We don't live in those days anymore. Certainly, Latin is still important for a lot of high schools. And obviously, you know, you could look at something like the Boston Latin School, which is the oldest public school in the country, which keeps Latin at the core of its curriculum. There are a lot of schools actually around the country that try to follow that model. I learned a bit about the Brooklyn Latin School, which follows that Boston Latin School model, but tries to bring that to disadvantaged kids who normally would not have anything to do with Latin. And it was really interesting to find out about that. Modest, I guess, in terms of how its place in our current educational system. It certainly has an importance in the church, the Catholic Church, but even there, it's been in decline since the early 1960s with the Second Vatican Council, which privileged the vernacular languages over Latin. And so even there's been a decline. And so you'd be surprised that even the cardinals themselves are not necessarily very good Latin speakers.
Well, you told a great story. Let me just read this. The lead of your piece, Besides the Pope, Who Speaks Latin Today, you're talking, we had someone on from ANSA a half hour ago, who's been covering the conclave and the lead up to the conclave. You mentioned that this Vatican correspondence, a different one for ANSA news agency, heard Pope Benedict make an announcement in Latin earlier this month. She understood completely and raced to break the story. The Pope was resigning. Meanwhile, many of the assembled cardinals, it was reported, were left scratching their heads because, as you write, their Latin skills weren't up to snuff. Is that like one of those apocryphal stories, or is that real? I mean, the cardinals
that's
really
real.
They
yeah,
didn't
no,
know
I mean,
what
that
he
was...
had said?
What's that?
They didn't
no,
know
that,
what he
that
had
was... reported. Yeah, I mean, there were cardinals who did not know what he was saying when the Pope made that announcement. It's pretty amazing. But and that, you know, that reporter from the ANSA news agency obviously had studied her Latin well and knew what was going on and was able to break the story. But it really all goes back to that Second Vatican Council when Latin really was kind of removed from many areas of Catholic life, not just the liturgy, but also seminary education. And so the kind of education that the cardinals would have gotten for the most part would not have had much of an emphasis on Latin. Someone like Pope Benedict actually is a very good Latin speaker. He's a real scholar of the language. But for the most part, the cardinals do not have that ability to speak it or understand it very well.
Does future Pope O'Malley speak Latin, do we know, or do we not know?
I don't know about O'Malley, but from what I know, the cardinals who are meeting right now in the conclave, they probably are not speaking Latin to each other. The language that they would be most familiar to the majority of them would actually be Italian,
right.
Because if you're a cardinal, then one of the things you have to do is you have to go to Rome, study at a pontifical university where you would have lots of opportunity to practice Italian. So that's the primary language, along with English, I'm sure, for the cardinals who are meeting at the conclave. But Latin, we know, is being used in the official announcements. So, for instance, I was just following a little bit of the live coverage, and the Monsignor Guido Marini closed the doors of the Sistine Chapel, and he said, extra omnes, which means everybody out. They're using Latin for those official purposes, but the cardinals themselves wouldn't be able to just sort of chat in Latin amongst themselves.
Our number is 877-301-8970. If you have a question for Ben Zimmer, or if you want to comment on Marjorie's thesis, which I think is not overstated when I say she's been telling me this for years, one of the reasons so few people speak English properly in this country is because no one takes Latin anymore.
Okay, Ben Zimmer, you are the language columnist for the Boston Globe. You must have thought about this. Why is it no one, everyone says, not everyone, but I heard Barack Obama say between you and I instead of between you and me. Now, my theory is that if he took Latin, he would never say between you and I. He would say between you and me. You must have noticed how we mangle the English language, most of us in the United States and all around the world.
Well, I mean, I certainly think that learning Latin can be quite helpful, as I said, in terms of learning the roots of English words, many of which have those Latin roots, those classical roots. At the same time, there's a danger in trying to say that if you know Latin grammar, therefore you will somehow have a better grasp on English grammar. In fact, throughout history, the people have tried to put the model of Latin grammar onto English, and sometimes it doesn't really fit very well. Mm-hmm. But since that's the idea that this is the way Latin works, so this is the way English should work, leads people to say, this is why you should not split an infinitive, because in Latin, an infinitive is one word that you can't split up. From my point of view, that whole split infinitive rule is kind of bogus, and it's just this attempt to apply Latin to English.
What about the preposition rule, Ben? You know, you look at your children, you say, and they're like in high school, they're about to go to college. What's a preposition? They kind of look at you like you're asking them for the dark side of the moon. You know what I mean?
No, it's true. I mean, knowing about parts of speech and how they're used is an important part of sort of language arts education, which often gets neglected. You don't necessarily need Latin for a good understanding of that. I would say exposure not just to Latin, but to many living languages as well, can give students a better understanding of the way language's grammar works.
Ben Zimmer is essentially saying to Marjorie, between you and me, Marjorie, you have no idea what you're talking about. Sheila from Norton, you're on with Ben Zimmer, Jim, and Marjorie. Hey, Sheila.
Hi, Ben. You didn't think you'd get away with without someone calling in asking for you to translate Semper, Semper Ubi Sub Ubi?
What does that mean?
Okay, what does that mean?
Always wear underwear in Latin.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Sheila, now what do you think? You studied Latin. Do you think the problem is we need to diagram sentences back in English class in seventh grade or something? Why can't we read and write and speak English anymore?
Well, I have to tell you, I am still working on what a dangling participle is. That always scared me. But I will say that the Latin, I took it in college. even. And I love the fact that it does give you all the root words. It didn't help me on the SATs, but it really does help for the New York Times crossword puzzle.
Well, there you go.
It does indeed. Hey, Sheila, thanks as always for your call. Our number is 877-301-8970.
Ben Zara, before you go, can you please tell us what a dangling participle is?
Oh, well, that would be something like that would be where you have a participle at the beginning which doesn't match the subject. So let me think. It would be something like going to the party, it was difficult for me to such and such or whatever. Like the idea is that that first part, going to the party, has to immediately modify the subject of the sentence. And if it doesn't, it can sometimes lead to a kind of comical result.
Yeah, we knew that, didn't we, Jim?
You know, Ben, can you settle, before you go, she's one last thing for me. Marjorie and I have been fighting about this issue about proper communication skills, using the language properly for years. And I love to hear someone who speaks beautifully. There's no question about that. But one of the I think we talked a couple of months ago about there were teachers groups were up in arms because of the texting practices of their teenage students. Because, you know, U is just the letter U, can is CN, all the abbreviations. That's my take. Again, even though I love the language spoken and used well, if your communication skills are good, And people understand you perfectly and you express yourself beautifully, why do we care about how perfectly you use the English language?
Well, we care when there are situations that demand the sort of formal standard use of the language, whether it's in an office environment or somewhere else where you would not be expected to use more informal or colloquial forms of the language. With something like texting, that's a completely different form of communication, which in fact requires a more informal style. And if you used a more formal style, it would be completely ridiculous. Kids, pretty early on now, that they're being exposed to all these different forms of communication and ways of using the language, and they learn pretty quickly how to navigate among them and figure out when it's appropriate to use more informal styles and when to use more formal styles. That's all part of language education now, and students, I think, are exposed to many new forms of communication, whether it's texting or other electronically mediated forms of communication. They still need to know when it's appropriate to use that and when they should learn sort of the formal standard language. That's all an important part to know. But they can navigate among them and switch back and forth very nimbly, I think.
Hey, THX to you, Ben Zimmer, really. Ben Zimmer, who is the language columnist for the Boston Globe. He's the executive producer of the Visual Thesaurus and Vocabulary.com. Ben, great to talk to you. Your piece in the Globe was terrific. Thanks for it.
Thank you.
It was terrific. And many of us, you know, we can't talk very well, but we do know about prepositions, Jim. I'm not a great talker, but I do know my prepositions.
Is it speak very well or is it talk very well? What should you have said just there since we just had Ben Zimmer on the phone? Many of us don't speak very well.
I don't speak very well
exactly.
Or talk very well, for that matter. But I am here on the radio because of the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Okay, Marjorie.
And I'm persevering nonetheless. Okay, that was Ben Zimmer, who's a language columnist for the Boston Globe.
It's a great story. You should read it. Google it. Beside
it is a great
the Pope
story.
Who speaks Latin today.
It
it's
is a great
piece.
Story. Up next, I can't wait to hear about this. We have Joyce Kilhawick and WGBH's Jaron Bowen. They're going to talk to us about local stage and the silver screen. That conversation is next on Boston Public Radio 89.7 WGBH.